91.3 WLRN presents South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Today we welcome back singer and songwriter Chloe Dolandis. She'll perform her new compositions about life and love. Her new band features musical director Christian Davis on guitar, Jesus Lascano on keyboards, Chris Passis bass, Seth Balin on drums and percussion, and Bill Muter on tuba. Catch the wonderful, memorable new tunes of Chloe Dolandis and her band coming up on South Florida Arts Beat right after these news updates from NPR and the WLRN Miami Herald News. Later on the program, filmmakers Dennis Scholl and Marlon Johnson talk about their new documentary, Deep City, The Birth of the Miami Sound, which premieres on WLRN Channel 17 TV. This Tuesday, September 23rd at 9 p.m., Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and our Palm Beach County Arts Calendar features Marilyn Bauer. With its mission to present live performances by innovative dance, music, and theater artists from around the world, support the development of new work by South Florida-based artists, and offer educational programs for students of all ages, Miami Light Project has become, in its 25 years, a principal mover and shaker on South Florida's multi-county arts scene. In fact, the organization has, over the decades, paved the way for South Florida arts explosion. Reaching a diverse cross-section of communities, their extensive outreach effort has included partnerships with many other arts organizations, universities, and social service agencies. And with us today to tell us about their exciting new 25th anniversary season of events is their artistic and executive director, Ms. Beth Boone. Great to have you back on the show, Beth.
Thank you for having me here, Ed.
Let's briefly talk about this past season. What were some of the highlights?
Well, Here and Now is always a great highlight. We had our 15th edition of Here and Now last year. That's our sort of signature program where we commission new work by Miami-based artists, and those artists develop that work at our space in Wynwood called the Lightbox, and then we premiere that work in a festival-style program. So that was a highlight of last year. As well, we had a fantastic singer and band, Teemer and the Dime Museum. Teemer is based in Los Angeles. It's sort of a punk rock operatic style. He really knocked it out of the ballpark for us. I would say, honestly, that in my 17 years with the organization, it's in my top five favorites. It blew me away.
Wow, that's saying something.
We will have them back. They were fantastic.
Now, you also had, you devoted a lot of your programming to poetry, helped out O Miami, and presented 44 events and 25 projects in that area. Wow.
Well, O Miami did that. I want to make sure that's clear.
Yeah.
But we were delighted to have them come into the Lightbox and to do a couple of different programs during the month of April when they bring poetry to every resident of Miami-Dade County. And they're going to come back this year. We love O Miami.
Collaborations are so important for arts organizations. You all have been doing it for 25 years, I dare say.
Yeah, it's a cornerstone of our work. I mean, it's it's challenging to get your work done at any time, and it's just a smart way of working to collaborate with like-minded organizations. You expand your audience, you expand your funding potential, you learn new things about how you can program in the future. So it's been a great part of our model.
As you told me off a microphone, you've entered phase three of your Lightbox location plan. What's that all about?
Okay, well, so phase three, we are, at least I am happily referring to as the tear the roof off the sucker phase. I'm a big P-Funk fan, love Parliament Funkadelics. And as I was thinking about this phase, this third phase of our work, that's the image that kept coming to my mind. I kept thinking about literally ripping the roof off the Lightbox in Wynwood and having our arts programming spill out into the streets and into the community, and having the members of the community and the residents of the nearby neighborhoods and from throughout the county come into the Lightbox. So we're using that as kind of an internal impulse, that image. And we are doing a great number of artist-led in community engagement projects. What that means is we are working with artists from around the country and from Miami to go into the community to engage residents and businesses in our surrounding neighborhood to actually develop content for works, new works, and then to present those works at the Lightbox.
So exciting.
That way people start to see their own stories reflected on stage. And that is very much connected to the heart and soul of Miami Light Project.
Mm, that's marvelous. Well, the 25th season is huge.
It's huge.
A great tip of the hat to marvelous jazzers and theater and dance. And let's start off with Mr. Teo Castellanos.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, we couldn't have a better season kickoff than Third Trinity, which is Teo Castellanos' latest work of art. It's a play that Teo has written and he's performing in. Miami Light Project commissioned this work, and it premieres at the Lightbox next month. It's got dramaturgy and direction by Terrell Alva McCraney. So Teo is an Edinburgh French First Award winner. Terrell is a MacArthur Genius Award winner. I mean, it's like a slam dunk kind of team, you know?
Go ahead.
Well, the piece opens on Friday, October 10th at the Lightbox, and it runs through October 18th. And what is all of Teo's work, I think it's pretty clear. I love all of his work. We have commissioned all of his four major evening-length works. This is an autobiographical piece about Teo's early life and filled with drama, beauty, pain, lessons learned, you know, and it's masterfully done.
The Lightbox at Goldman Warehouse is at 404 Northwest 26th Street in the heart of the Wynwood District in Miami. And that, once again, is October 10th and the 11th. Third Trinity with Mr. Teo Castellanos. Now, we move on to an indie film club.
Yes. So the Indie Film Club is an organization based in Miami, and they annually are producing a program called Filmgate. It's an interactive transmedia festival. That's what they call it. And last year marked the first year of them doing it at the Lightbox, and we've invited them back this year and trying to take it to a next level with them by, partnering with them on the project. We give incentives to other arts organizations based in the community and individual artists, and we provide them with really favorable rental opportunities at the Lightbox. And I really see as an important part of our work leadership, you know, helping other arts organizations, like-minded organizations, younger organizations to get a leg up and get their work moving forward. So we're really happy to be working with them again.
I love how for decades the Miami Light Project has taken on so many different areas in the arts infrastructure here in South Florida. So ultimately, you're keeping some great artists here in South Florida here in the area, which is magic, which is what we need.
I agree. I think it is what we need. And it's a little bit of magic and it's a whole lot of commitment, you know. So what I'm amazed by is that it doesn't take an enormous financial investment to get artists to sit up and pay attention to their surroundings and to decide, you know, this is a viable place for me to live and work. I'm either going to stay here because I've grew up here or came from a school here, or artists from around the country are starting to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to go move to Miami. It's a place where things are happening. And so I think that we have been a leader in that kind of effort through our commissioning programs, and I'm very proud of that work.
So Indie Film Club, February 2nd through the 7th, 2015, at the Lightbox at the Goldman Warehouse, coming up in late February. Rude Mechanics?
Rude Mechs? Yeah, the Rude Mechanicals. It's an Austin, Texas-based theater collective. They're fantastic. This is a co-presentation with my MDC Live Arts.
Great series.
It's a really great theater piece. They are going to take over the entire Lightbox. They basically create an installation in the theater, and then it's a very immersive, interactive piece. Only 30 people at a time can go through and be sort of a part of the piece and experience the piece. and we have people. We have three performances per night and they're going to be in town for 2 weeks. So there's lots of opportunities to do that. We're going to have it culminate in a beer garden of sorts, so that once you go through the interactive process, you can, you know, hang out in the parking lot, get
people are going to need a little sedation. Is
well,
that the idea?
I don't know, but they're going to at least have a good time together.
Yes, it sounds like a
wait
ball
for the others to come through and talk about the work. Very interactive.
That's February 20th, 21st, 27th, 28th. 22nd and March 1st. Rude Mex.
Yeah.
Oh, now.
Yes.
Now, moving on, your Global Cuba Fest is always so huge, and it's even bigger this year. You're bringing in Omar Sosa.
Yes.
He's world renowned.
He is indeed, and he is going to make magic in the light box. Global Cuba Fest is a program that we founded together with Fundarte, another great collegial organization.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, we moved Global Cuba Fest to the Lightbox for the first time, and we presented Denai Suarez and Daphnis Prieto. This year, we have Yisi Garcia y su banda. She is a very young, very spectacular drummer. Opened the Havana Jazz Festival last year.
Mm.
She's performed many times in the United States and with other artists. And so she's going to be coming with her band, a particular project she's been working on for a couple of years now. We will also have Volcan, which will be at Dade County Auditorium, actually. And Fundarte is taking the lead on that presentation. And then we...
Wait a minute.
Well, I know. Slow down.
Don't forget Gonzalo Rubalcaba.
Yes.
Now, is this a work that he wrote?
And Horacio El Negro. Well, Volcan
and Giovanni Hidalgo.
Yeah, it's like they're powerhouses.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So this is... Volcan is the name of this project that they're doing together.
Okay.
So it's the name of this group of superstars as they've come together.
Mostly
in this
a musical
trio.
Project. Though.
Yes, yeah. It is a musical project.
Wow.
And
that's
so
at the Miami-Dade County Auditorium,
yes,
March 7th.
March 7th. We open Global Cuba Fest with that. We move on to the Lightbox with Yisi Garcia y su banda. Mm-hmm. And then we close a month later with Omar Sosa at the Lightbox at Goldman Warehouse.
On April the 11th. Oh, stellar programming,
yeah.
Beth. Just stellar. Let's talk about the new Deco Ensemble. They'll perform April 2nd through the 4th. And they are in residence at the Lightbox?
Yes. Yeah, so I feel like this is a feather in our cap that we have been able to join forces together with this brand new ensemble, the New Deco Ensemble, founded and co-directed by Sam Hyken and Giacomo Barrios. They are a composer-conductor team, and they've put together a great ensemble. They're going to be playing spectacular music, some that they compose, some that is music that exists in the world today, and they're in residence at the Lightbox. We're thrilled that they knocked on our door, and then I just said, you can't leave, you know? And so, in fact, they're going to be in residence all year long, but the week of their performance, their main performance is on Saturday, April 4th, but the week of their performance, they'll do a number of workshops in the community, educational activities, and these two men are really just exceptional artists and just beyond delightful to work with.
Wonderful that you always have community outreach programs, an important part of your year-to-year programming. That is April 2nd through the 4th, New Deco Ensemble, and as we mentioned, April 11th for the wonderful, the outstanding world-renowned Omar Sosa. O Miami will be part and parcel of your 2015 series. You have your big fundraiser. Is that April 25th with
yes,
the Friends Dinner?
The Friends Dinner is April 25th. It's always filled with great food, great drinks, surprise performances, a lot of fun to be had, usually a challenge to wear something fun and different. And so, you know, we'll send out more information on that as we move into it.
In our last minute with Beth Boone, the Artistic and Executive Director of Miami Light Project, going through a wonderful list of exciting programming coming up in 2015. Here and Now in 2015, May 7th through 9th and 14th through the 16th. Excuse my brevity, but we also want to talk about the marvelous South Florida dancer, choreographer Rosie Herrera, May 28th through the 30th. Kid, her piece.
Yeah, we commissioned this from Rosie. She started to develop the piece through a series of trips to Cuba that we facilitated, where she could learn learn some of her cultural history. It's an identity piece that premieres at the Lightbox, and then we'll go on to several other organizations nationwide. And then we close the season with Bang on a Can All-Stars, a spectacular music group that is astonishing, have never performed in South Florida in their 30-year history. And I want to say quickly that, you know, this is our 25th anniversary season. We have received the spectacular grant from Art Place America, and we are asking folks to make contributions to the organization each time they come through the halls of the Lightbox all year long.
We never have enough time for the wonderful Beth Boone, Artistic and Executive Director of Miami Light Project. More information about these incredible shows at MiamiLightProject.com or call them directly at 305-576-4350. Beth, thank you so much for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you, Ed.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the show, we'll feature Chef Norman Van Aken with a word on food, and our Palm Beach Arts Calendar features Marilyn Bauer with enticing events for your consideration. In the mid-60s, the sound of soul music was all over the radio dial. Miami's contribution came from a small label called Deep City Records, founded by Johnny Pearsall and Willie Clark. These two Florida A&M University grads honed their business and musical skills, gathered the best local musicians in South Florida, and built the first black-owned record label in Florida. It was the beginning of the Miami sound. This Tuesday night at 9 p.m., WLRN-TV Channel 17 premieres the new documentary, Deep City, The Birth of the Miami Sound. It was produced and directed by Dennis Scholl, Marlon Johnson, and Chad Tingle. Mr. Scholl wrote the screenplay, and he and Mr. Marlon Johnson joined us recently in the studio to learn more about this marvelous slice of South Florida's musical history. Gentlemen, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
It's great to be here.
Dennis, tell me, as Vice President of Arts for the Knight Foundation, as an art collector, and you're into so many other activities, when did you first start to get into filmmaking?
Well, when I met a great partner like Marlon Johnson, actually. I had been doing some live television work for Plum TV, where Marlon was the producer, and he introduced me to Chad Tingle, also our partner on this project, this Deep City project. And we made a short film together, and it played in a lot of film festivals. It won a couple film festivals.
Ah.
It was all about why African-American women in Miami, and everywhere really, wear hats to church. It was called Sunday's Best. And it turned out to be a great collaboration. These are two amazing, amazing filmmakers. And I found the Deep City Project, and away we went.
So you go back to the days of Plum TV on Lincoln Road, I believe it was. And when I first met you, Marlon, you were an executive director over there.
Yeah, I was one of the executive directors and also a senior producer there. And it was a great opportunity to have a creative outlet for a lot of years, and met a wonderful guy in Dennis Scholl. And yeah, the rest was history.
So when did you all decide to collaborate on such a fantastic topic? This is a necessary topic. Archivists need to deal with the history of South Florida, particularly in the wonderful musical history. When did that collaboration take place?
About 3 or 4 years ago, a friend actually, sent me the Deep City compilation, and I hope we'll get to hear a little bit of that. But I looked at it, and I read it, and I listened to it, and I had no idea it was from Miami. And when I read the liner notes, which are spectacular, it's by the Numero Group, a Chicago reissue organization out, and I was blown away. I have lived in this community for 50 years, and I didn't even know that this kind of music existed at this level. The music is world class in terms of quality.
Mm-hmm. Most people don't.
Exactly. And I said, oh, my goodness, we've got to do something about this. Mm-hmm. And Marlon and Chad and I had made a short film together, and it went very well, and we liked collaborating with each other. But the second thing that began to happen was more broad-based. Our community, which is only 115 years old, our community has suddenly begun to tell its stories. And we have to make sure that every neighborhood gets to tell their stories. And that's really what Deep City was about for us. It was going into the neighborhood. Marlon and Chad had to convince the musicians that this was a story that was worth telling and was a story that was going to be told in a generous and kind of loving way. That was always our stated goal. Mm-hmm. These are spectacular musicians that had an incredible moment. And we want to make sure that they got their due.
Well, it's so wonderfully fortuitous as well, because a number of the musicians are still with us, thank goodness. So, Marlon, let's start talking about the wonderful musicians. Johnny Pearsall is gone,
yes.
But he attended FAMU with Willie Pee Wee Clark, and that's where it started musically for Deep City Records, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. That's where they started. Willie was in the Marching 100 band, and that's kind of where he got his inspiration from. They met up also with Arnold Albury, who was a musician as well, and he was the one that really could write music and compose music.
And arrange,
yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, when they came back to Miami, they were really motivated to start this record label and find artists and, you know, create something wonderful.
Let's talk about some of the other great folks involved in Deep City Records. Clarence Reed figures in, and he was an established musician and singer-songwriter, so he brought his own element to this great songwriting and production team of Willie and Johnny.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the dilemmas that Johnny and Willie had early on when they came back to Miami is they really didn't know the Miami nightclub scene, and so they had to find someone that had, quote-unquote, street cred in that respect, and that was Clarence. And so he really lent a lot of credibility to the musicians early on, so he was the one that came in and really help start.
Clarence Reed pulled in most of the South Florida musicians.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Those being?
You know, there was Little Beaver, and, you know, Helene was also part.
Helene Smith,
yep, exactly. Betty Wright as well.
Now, Helene Smith was working for Johnny's record shop, wonderful images of that record shop, and I'm a vinyl holic, I must publicly admit here. I wish I'd gone through those front doors. But they eventually got married.
Yeah, they did.
And we'll pick up on that a little bit later, because it might have given them a little bit of a hardship regarding the record label. But here you have a young gal, very shy, mm-hmm. being urged to be a vocalist, as was Betty Wright. Very young gal, but she wasn't shy, was she?
No, not at all. and that comes across in the film. She's a very distinct personality, a very mm-hmm. larger-than-life personality. And even early on, the guys, Johnny and Willie, recognized that very early. And she became who she was because of that personality in large part.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, as a filmmaker, tell me about the various personalities. I'm sure you had a lot of fun working with the shy and working with the outright get me to the stage and all of that. Wonderful film that you pulled from a Soul Train.
It was an interesting process. Just because we decided that we wanted to make a film about Deep City, it doesn't mean that Deep City wanted to have a film made about it. And Willie really was the driving force behind getting the film made from a talent perspective. And of course, WLRN and their great coming into the film after we got it going and really being willing to serve as the producer of the film with us and to help us complete it made all the difference in the world. But Willie was good to go, but it took a lot of visits by Marlon and Chad Tingle, our co-producer and director, with the rest of the artists. You know, the music business hadn't been good to them. It had been a difficult time for them. Their dreams were much greater than their actual results. And so when we reached out to artists like Little Beaver or Arnold Albury or Helene even, Helene is, you know, is very shy to this day, and yet she was the queen of the Miami Sound. Mm-hmm. And there's a segment in the movie where Willie takes her to go sing on stage, and they get there, and she goes, I don't want to go on. And Willie goes, what do you mean you don't want to go on? Come on, man. And, you know, she was kind of falling in love with Johnny at that point in time, and she just wanted to be with Johnny. And, you know, the singing for her, she enjoyed it, but it was also very difficult for her. So Marlon and Chad had to go out and visit with each of the artists multiple times. And in fact, we never did get Betty Wright, who was probably the most successful person of the musicians in Deep City. We never did get her to agree to speak on camera with us. Mm. Her and Marlon had a lot of conversations, but we never could get her. But what we did instead is we were able to get clips from both American Bandstand and Soul Train.
Those are just incredible.
Where Betty, you know, where Betty gave us her personality, as Marlon said, and where you really got the feel for what a go-getter she was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and interesting enough, as filmmakers, I think it made for a better film, not necessarily having her in it, because it forced us to use other devices in order to tell the story. So sometimes you get happy surprises, and I think that was one of them.
Yeah, it turned out to be a really great vehicle to convey Betty's success. You know, and Willie, of course, went on to success later, too. Willie won a Grammy and is still making music.
Well, we'll get to that in our second segment about the documentary Deep City, The Birth of the Miami Sound, which premieres on WLRN-TV Tuesday, September 23rd at 9 p.m. right here on South Florida Arts Beat with our guests, Dennis Scholl and Marlon Johnson. Please stay with us here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. We'll be right back. Listening to South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. We return to the conversation with our guests about the new WLRN-TV documentary, Deep City, The Birth of the Miami Sound.
And I need all this love to come about.
We're back with our guests, Dennis Scholl and Marlon Johnson of Deep City, and it has its premiere on WLRN coming up Tuesday, September 23rd at 9 p.m. on WLRN-TV, Channel 17, and it will have subsequent airings Thursday, September 25th, Friday, September 26th, Saturday, September 27th as well. We hope you will tune in each and every airing on WLRN-TV.
Works for me.
Yep.
So the musicians were somewhat hesitant. What other reasons do you think that was? Because they were going to get ripped off again, maybe?
I think that they had compartmentalized this as a time in their life that they had had high hopes that were dashed and had moved away from it and had gone on to other careers. Helene was a school teacher. Willie was a school teacher. Johnny was a school administrator. Little Beaver was a bus mechanic. So they had all gone on to do other things. And I think it was a little bit tough for them to reopen the wounds that they had gone through during this time period. They were excellent musicians, but they couldn't get the distribution that they needed. Some of it, I believe, was segregation, racial issues. Willie will tell you in the film that he couldn't get the music north of West Palm Beach.
Hmm.
So I think there was a little bit of hesitancy. The joy has been that when they saw the film and they saw that we tried to give them really the dignity that they deserved as great artists in our community, I think people were very pleased. And that made me feel great because that's really why we made this film.
Yeah, Marlon,
you have
something to say?
I also think that in Miami there's an inherent degree of skepticism that just exists. And as filmmakers, you really have to fight through that because we are interviewing and interfacing with real subjects. And so there's an art to really getting subjects to be comfortable around you and gain confidence and what it is you do. And once they gain that, then it becomes a lot easier. But it definitely is a certain skill set.
Dennis?
One of the moments that we knew that we had broken through is Helene is sitting in the chair, with she's all mic'd up, the cameras are going, we've got a big crew. And we started to play some of the old Deep City music for her. And I think it was the first song that they ever recorded. It's called The Pot Can't Talk About the Kettle. And Helene began to nod and back and forth. And I had them turn down the music. I said, Helene, do you remember the lyrics at all? And she said, yes. I said, do you think you could give us a little a cappella? And Helene had stopped singing. She only had sang in the church a little bit in the last 20 years. And we turned the sound back up again so she could hear it, but took it out of the mics. And she busts out this a cappella version. And I actually got emotional. I mean, it was like, oh, my gosh, you know. It was one of the great, great moments in the film making process where you could see her just kind of reemerge and feel it all again and take her right back to those days.
Mm-hmm. The label had an unfortunately short life. Dennis, what did you say, about 4 years or so?
Yeah, Deep City existed as an entity from 1964 to 1968. And when Betty came on, as Marlon said, Johnny and Willie began to disagree. Helene had been the star of the label. Mm-hmm. Betty showed up. There was this inherent conflict. Johnny and Helene were together as a couple, mm-hmm. and Willie knew that Betty was the chance of a lifetime, and he turned out to be accurate about that. And so they just began, you know, they just disagreed. And Henry Stone, the well-known independent music producer, one of the biggest music producers in the world.
He was down here with TK Productions and distributing essentially at that time, right?
Yeah, he was distributing a lot of different music. And he invited the whole group over because he knew how good they were. Mm. And Willie wanted to go, and Betty wanted to go, and Johnny didn't want to go, and Helene didn't want to go.
Johnny wanted to do his own thing, I guess.
For a number of reasons. I think he felt uncomfortable putting his operation together with another organization. And I think he felt like Helene might not be the star. And so it was a difficult moment for all of them. And Willie and Betty went over to Henry. And Johnny and Helene, they made one more record together, but Helene never sang after that again.
Marlon, tell me about your interaction with the musicians. How did some of them feel about, really, the demise of the label?
I think that, you know, Willie had fond memories of starting this label and was always willing to talk about it and tell stories and certain anecdotes. Like Dennis said, Helene had moved on, but I think secretly she still had a desire to maybe get back in the studio and record. Her outlet for the church was really important to her. Clarence Reed, who we don't talk about that much, who we haven't talked about that much, but he had a little bit more difficult time revisiting a lot of the label in that sense. So,
Dennis?
You can't talk about Deep City without talking about Clarence Reed. Mm-hmm. He was the musician, the songwriter of Deep City. Clarence's book of songs that he created and produced and directed and sang and just performed on is huge. And he actually had to sell his song rights to save his mother's house.
Wow.
And so when Clarence talked about that, it was a very, very difficult moment for him. And I think that, once again, you know, these artists were very talented, but that's the art side of it. The business side of it was a lot tougher for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, when the label broke up and essentially Henry Stone came into the picture, did he treat the artists well, do you think, in your opinion?
I think you'd have to ask the artists that. Mm-hmm. Henry was kind enough to sit with us just before he passed away and tell us about when he heard Helene for the first time and when he heard Betty for the first time, because hearing them is what triggered him making the offer to bring all the artists over to TK. And of course, the artists that went worked for a long time after that, you know, at TK.
Yeah.
So
Clarence Reed had hit after hit after hit.
Must have been a very good working relationship for people at TK, because they stayed for a very, very long time up until the demise of TK during the famous Cleveland Disco Sucks night at the Cleveland Indians baseball stadium. That was the end of disco.
Well, yeah. I must say the stories are really legendary, and perhaps you all will tell those stories in your next film. Deep City, The Birth of the Miami Sound, premieres on WLRN-TV Channel 17 Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, September 23rd at 9 o'clock. Gentlemen, we have just a few more minutes left. And what's next on the agenda? No doubt you're halfway through completing your next work.
Well, Marlon and I have been working together on a film with Wynton Marsalis,
wow,
the jazz trumpeter. We shot it up in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Friendship Baptist Missionary Church. And it's Wynton, the Jazz at Lincoln Center Big Band, and 70 choral members from the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem. Mm. So we're very excited about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're also excited about how this community has Miami filmmakers telling Miami stories to a Miami audience, but that are traveling all over the world. And we just want to be a part of that. We're going to continue to tell Miami stories, and we've got a good one coming up that we've been thinking about, but we're not giving it away yet.
Well, you can at least tease me now.
I think we just did.
That's all I get.
We do have a very, very interesting new film idea for another musician from the 50s who also has been a little forgotten.
Okay. There's so many down here. And guys, thank you so much for producing and putting this magnificent film together, Deep City, The Birth of the Miami Sound. It really did start with the Deep City record label, as not too many people know about. We hope you have many more wonderful documentaries about life here in South Florida. We love them all. And thank you for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat, Dennis Scholl and Marlon Johnson. Good luck, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Those broadcast dates once again for Deep City, The Birth of the Miami Sound on WLRN Channel 17. This coming Tuesday, September 23rd at 9 p.m. That's the premiere. Thursday, September 25th at 9. Friday, September 26th at 8 p.m. And Saturday, September 27th at 2 p.m. and 10 p.m. For more information, go to WLRN.org or DeepCityTheMovie.com and check out their Facebook page. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is miso. Despite our, we thought, carefully planned strategy for a lunch of divine sushi, we were in for a shock as we slowed to pull onto the side street off the 79th Street Causeway. The shock was due to the line of even more prepared folks lined outside the still-locked door of the somewhat oddly named Sushi Deli and Japanese Market. They were waiting for the small and coveted restaurant to open. The word had gone out. This was the last day they'd be serving before closing for the entire month of June and their annual vacation to Japan. The faithful had gathered. There are but 16 seats in this restaurant. As it turned out, we were numbers 17 and 18. Oh, to have left our home 10 minutes earlier. That meant that we would need to wait for others to eat an entire lunch before we would be starting off with a cup of palate-awakening miso soup. We spent the time studying the shelves of the small shop area of the business. Sushi Deli and Japanese Market must have started as a shop that became a restaurant. The lighting is normal for a shop. It is, to be honest, a bit unromantic for a restaurant. But that doesn't stop sushi master Michio Kushi from garnering a full house. Chef Kushi is originally from Japan's Katsura, Wakayama Prefecture. Their fish markets may not share the fame of their Tokyo counterpart, the Tsukiji Fish Market, but they are just as noteworthy. Michio has made South Florida his home and Sushi Deli, as we call it, his place of work since buying the spot with his hard-working wife in 1999. It is a classic family affair restaurant. Michio works elbow to elbow alongside his pretty daughter at the short and frenetic counter. The complexly configured chef steadily leads the battle of feeding a crush of followers who might wish for more seats. Word to the newcomers, do not let your cell phone ring. You will be sent back across the causeway without so much as an eel roll in your belly. ABBA was playing The Dancing Queen over the simple speaker system. I seemed to be the only one hearing it. I was not dancing. Families of many ethnicities were arriving. A beautiful Japanese boy hugged his parents joyously. Perhaps he was enjoying the song. I slowly surveyed the offerings in the shop. Frozen octopus, rice wine vinegars, sesame seed grinders, chili sauces, rice cookers, unique drugstore products with names that were oddly translated, soy sauces, Kewpie mayo, and more. My eyes landed on a variety of miso pastes in the cooler. Miso is produced by fermenting soybeans with salt. Fermentation is coming back in vogue for our ever more curious food culture in America. Miso has fermentation in its DNA. Miso often has other ingredients in it, such as white or brown rice and sometimes barley. The textures range from smooth to even chunky. The colors are an indication of saltiness, with the lighter being the less so as a general rule. And the colors range from nearly pearl to light yellow brown to reddish brown to chocolate brown. Miso is loaded with umami as well as excellent for you nutrients. I bought a bag of miso while still wondering why Sushi Deli does not put in more seats. But they are the ones vacationing in Japan, not me. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir, No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Aroma Triggers. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat Entertainment Calendar. And today we welcome back Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing and Governmental Affairs for the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. How's your day, Marilyn?
It's hectic, to put it mildly.
But thanks so much for taking out a little time for us, and we want to find out what's going on.
Well, you know what's funny? When I first moved to Florida many moons ago, I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to fly back to New York to get my cultural fix. Well, that just is not the case. There is so much happening here at such an amazing level.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's mind-boggling. And up here in Palm Beach County, we have a big exhibition coming next month that's just been announced, and that is an exhibition on the afterlife. Now, this is 200 rare and authentic Egyptian artifacts that have never been seen in North America before. Mm. And included in this group of artifacts are three mummies. And one of the mummies is a little girl, and what's going to happen is, because this is at the South Florida Science Center, the South Florida Science Center has arranged for the little girl mummy to have a CT scan, and they're going to be able to determine exactly what the cause of death was.
Wow.
So we're expecting British dignitaries and museum people to come into Palm Beach County to take a look at what happens and to see a lot of these artifacts. The show goes on through November, so there's a lot of opportunities to come and see the pieces. They're even doing an evening event ongoing that's called Mummies and Merlot, so that's something that you'll find me at. In Boca, we have something really, really interesting, also something that has toured across the U.S., and it is a work of sculpture by an artist named Emma Anna. And if you can picture this, it's the word imagine with the I left off. So it's I-M-A-G, and then there's this blank, and then N-E. And it measures more than 13.7 feet, it's about 3 feet high, and it weighs about 550 pounds, and it's arranged out of these giant letters. But the I acts as a blank canvas, and the audience, whoever comes to visit Imagine, is asked to come in and to do a little artwork of their own right on the piece. So this is going to be at Sanborn Square from October 1st through November 30th. So it's a really interesting, interactive piece of art that I encourage everyone to come out and take a look at. At the Cultural Council, of course, we have quite a bit of programming, and right now we have a really interesting exhibit called Repurposed Reseen. It's two parts, and it highlights, the first part is artists using common objects that they've transformed into works of art. And there's pieces that are made from coat hangers or magazines or clock parts. And they're really, really interesting, whimsical pieces that are really a lot of fun to see. And then in the second room, we had called artists. And the artists came in and made pieces of art based on old VHS cassettes. If you ever wonder what to do with those, now you know.
I've got zillions of them.
Okay, well, you could have been in the show. We also start our Culture and Cocktails 10th anniversary season on November 3rd. And what's really interesting about this is that, you know, we bring in people who have a lot to say in different art forms, and we pair them with an interviewer. We hold these at the Colony Hotel. And the first one is a conversation with James Patterson, the famed thriller writer, and his wife, Sue Patterson, who's done quite a bit of documentary photos and filmmaking. And so this is going to be a really sort of interesting evening for all of our members and would-be members. And then again, down in Boca, you know, Boca's got a great show going on now for the next couple of months. And this is a juried show. It's an all-Florida show. And there's work in just about every conceivable medium. And definitely worth seeing. A lot of fun. Great big show. Lake Worth is going to open up their season with MAME. It's such a classic.
It's a grand one, classic.
It is. You know, it opens October 9th. You know, how many times can you see it? As many times as there's a ticket available. It's such a wonderful show. And let's see, we have at the Maltz Theater, they open their season on the 26th, and they're opening with The Foreigner, which is a comedy that's set in Georgia about a pathologically shy man who adopts a persona as a non-English-speaking foreigner in order to avoid conversation. And so that should be very interesting. It's also worth it to note that they'll be doing Les Mis this year during their season, which
great
is
show.
Going to be wonderful. You know, everybody's opening now. Everybody's starting out their season. Ballet Palm Beach, one of our favorites. We work a lot with them here at the Council. They have a great flash ballet mob that goes around to different locations. And they're opening their season with Giselle on October 24th. And that'll be followed by, of course, the Nutcracker at Christmas time.
Marilyn, where can our listeners find out more about these and other events?
Please come and visit us at palmbeachculture.com.
That's Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing and Governmental Affairs for the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. Marilyn, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Ed. Take care.
Did you ever attend a boys' club or a boys and girls' club here in Miami-Dade when you were a kid? If so, they want to hear from you. The Boys and Girls Club of Miami-Dade is planning an amazing reunion for its alumni in early 2015, and they want you to be there. What a great opportunity to reconnect and see your old friends and coaches from years past. For more information, call Arthur Hernandez at 305-446-9910, extension 13, or email alumni at BGCMIA, as in Boys and Girls Club of Miami, BGCMIA.org, for more information. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors as well, Norman Van Aken and Marilyn Bauer. Please call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, we'll feature topical currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.